Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. With over 200,000 locations throughout the U.S. and offering 12,000 different types of batteries, stop into your local Interstate Battery store today and let them help you find the right batteries for your everyday life.
This is the Sawn Outdoors Podcast. What up, what up, what up? Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Sawn Outdoors Podcast. It's been another 2 weeks, and it's been a crazy 2 weeks. We've gotten some moisture again here in Utah. There's lots of water coming out of the canyons. Super green out. This is going to be a great year for antler growth. And we had a lot of wildfires here in Utah last year. So I think with all the new growth in those burned areas, it's going to be pretty good. And we're hoping that Zach will draw a limited entry elk tag here. So crossing our fingers, we should know in about a month whether or not he draws that tag. Today's episode is a great one. It's another one that we recorded at the 2019 Western Hunting and Conservation Expo. And we sat down with McKay Sorensen. He goes by Utah Trapper McKay on his Instagram. You take a look at his Instagram, there's really no confusion what he does, and especially by his name. He's a trapper. He also loves big mule deer and shed antlers. McKay has his own business where he restores antlers. He has an antler restoration business, and he does a marvelous job, I must say. So I really wanted to get him on the podcast. Thankfully, we were able to meet up at the expo, and we talked a lot of things. We talked a lot about his trapping, talked a lot about shed hunting, and his antler restoration. Turns out he gets people from all over the country sending in their old, kind of chalky, cracked, bleached out antlers, and he restores them to more of a brown. So as if the deer would have shed it right then and someone had found it shortly thereafter. So he has a really great Instagram page. Look him up, Utah Trapper_McKay. That's McKay. And check it out. You can DM him on his Instagram page, and he can give you some pricing or whatever, and you can arrange for him to fix or restore your antlers. So if you're in the market for that, doesn't matter where you're at in the country, you can ship them to him and he will take care of them. And gosh, just jump on his Instagram and scroll through there. He also has a great editing eye, takes some good photos. So this one is a fun one, guys. It's not really trapping season. We're kind of out of that, but we are still in shed season most places. I know that Nevada opens up this week, as well as Wyoming and some other places. So hopefully you guys are getting out, finding some browns. But if you find some chalky whites or something you want restored, it's big enough, reach out to McKay Sorensen. Before we get started, I want to talk a little bit about sponsor of this podcast, King's Camo. King's is doing some awesome things. King's is great. Ian and I actually recorded a couple videos doing some like gear breakdowns, overviews, reviews, whatever you want to call them. We talked about the Ridge Pant, which is a lightweight early season pant. It's freaking fantastic. Jump on our YouTube channel and check that out. If you're looking for a good pant to shed hunt in, turkey hunt, whatever it may be, summer scouting, or just wearing around town, it's an awesome pant. They come in camo, and they have solids, the dark khaki and the charcoal colors. We also reviewed one of our other favorite pieces, the High Top Hoodie. That thing's fantastic. And if we can talk the guys at King's into creating some solids in that, buddy, I'll tell you what. That'll be, I'll be running the Ridge Pant and the, like, probably a tan, dark khaki high top hoodie. So check that out. I know a lot of you are getting into turkey hunting. If you're looking for some good camo, lightweight, breathable stuff, jump on a King's Camo. They've got pretty much anything you would need to be outfitted for your hunt. So don't forget, when you're shopping at King's Camo, use our discount code. That has changed a little bit. It's SON Outdoors now. It used to be just SON. Now just tack on Outdoors at the end of that. You'll save yourself 15% off anything in your cart, the whole entire cart, even sale items. It's freaking fantastic. So you're not going to find a better deal than that. Without further ado, let's jump into the podcast with McKay Sorensen.
All right. Well, we're sitting here with McKay Sorensen.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Tell us about McKay. Who are you? What do you do?
Well, I Trapper McKay, Utah Trapper McKay on Instagram.
Yeah? Dude, you have a sick page.
Thanks.
Your page is pretty sick.
Thanks.
It is awesome. Mm-hmm. I've been following it for a while, and I love what I see. Like, for one, you're doing awesome things. You have all kinds of awesome antlers, and then you also take really good photos.
Thanks.
So kudos on that.
Yeah.
So I guess I do antler restoration. That's kind of, you know, my bread and butter. I've been fixing horns since I was in high school, you know, 10 years. And I think I kind of got it figured out. At least I'm starting to.
Yeah.
And kind of got into a little niche there. And, you know, I'm just fortunate I get to work on a lot of cool stuff.
What got you into it? How'd you start?
In high school with good old wood stain.
Yeah?
Minwax wood stain and
elk. Just kind of messing around, just like, hey, you got to do
just
this.
Just an idea.
Yeah, you know, just thought, I bet I wanted to make it brown again. You know, you all know what wood stain in an elk horn looks like.
Yeah.
You know, it's brown and the tips are white and that's all you got.
Right.
But, you know, it just kind of evolved from there. I'd get projects, you know, that I didn't. I ruined a lot of horns, basically. I ruined a lot of my own horns, figuring it out, and I had help from some good taxidermists along the way that kind of pointed me in the right direction, and I pretty well ran with it. Anymore, I hand paint all the details.
Wow.
You know, it's not the white paint, you know, that a lot of guys use, or the antler wax, or. And then a year ago, I started making replicas. I've always wanted to do that, and that's a costly. It was a costly endeavor to figure out, you know, because it's one of those things no one will teach you how to do it.
Right.
And so there's a little bit on YouTube you could learn and just trial and error. And I'm starting to get a hand on that. And hopefully I can get a little bit busier with that. You know, it's a pretty established market already, but
yeah.
Right.
Hopefully I can get a foot in the door.
I only know of like one other place.
The guy in Nephi. Yeah, Nephi.
What's that one called?
He's Split Image Replicas.
Split Image, that's right.
He does a good job. There's another guy that I actually went to high school with in Monroe, Utah, Trigger Finger Replicas. He does a really nice job.
Well, if you're going to be anywhere for that, I guess Monroe can be the elk area.
Yeah.
And then you got the strip right in your backyard.
The Pontagon.
The coral sand, you know, coral pink sand dunes. Dude, right. I went down there shed hunting one time. Actually, I wasn't even shed hunting. I think I was just watching mule deer.
Uh-huh.
Can't believe.
Yeah.
The amount of deer that come off the Pontagon onto there.
Yeah. The sands are a special place. I spend a lot of time there hunting coyotes and, you know, picking up horns, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But on Saturday, actually, I found my first brown set of the year on the Pontagon.
Awesome.
Yeah, I saw that.
But
yeah.
You want to know what's crazy? I'm jaded. I'm jaded with deer, man. Like, I get to touch so many giants. I kind of forgot, like, how exciting a 180 buck is to find. And I found it. I was like, oh, that's a nice buck. I was excited, and I got back to the truck, and my buddies I was with, like, they lost their mind. Like, is it really this, you know, is it that nice of a deer? And it was.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had to
get back to reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I ask this guy all the time, because, like, buck behind you.
Right.
He killed an insane buck. Like, uh-huh. That is a buck of a lifetime. And it's like, Zach, like, do other deer even get you excited? A 180 buck? Does that even, like, make you tick anymore?
Uh-huh.
Well, the year after I killed that buck, I answered that question with my buddy's hunt. His first ever hunt, we're on general unit.
Uh-huh.
It was the second to last day. It was the only day I was going to be able to help him. He didn't have any family members that hunted, nothing. He just asked me, hey, would you mind taking me out? So I took him to a pretty accessible location. I mean, we had to hike quite a bit, but it wasn't too crazy. And just expecting to get him a decent first buck. And
yeah.
We're sitting there. It's about 11:15 in the morning. I'm getting ready to take a nap. He goes, hey, what's that over there? And across the canyon coming out of pine trees, 180-inch buck. And I got more buck fever with him than I did with this guy. Probably because it was a surprise.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like I was scouting him or anything. He just showed up. And mm-hmm. So he did. He killed a 181-inch buck. And I could probably say that for sure I had more buck fever. But it's almost more impressive to me to kill a 180-inch buck on a general season unit than a 240-inch on the Henrys.
Oh, well, okay.
So it just, I don't know, it just depends, you know. If I had a Henry's tag and I killed a 210-inch buck, I'd probably be a little like, oh, crap.
Bummed out.
Because yeah. I know what I did already, but if it's
we went down there this during the rut this last year,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, dude, we got to go down there. You will not believe. It's crazy. So we go down there, and it's like, dude, that's a really nice buck. I'm sitting here videoing it. He's like getting impatient with me. He's like, dude, let's go. It's getting dark. Come on, we got to go see what else. I'm like, that's a great buck. He's like, it's the Henrys. Let's go.
Yeah. And that was probably the biggest buck we saw the whole weekend. It was sad. It was kind of sad.
Yeah, we talked to some guys down there, and I don't know if you've spent any time on the Henrys. I had
never been on the Henrys.
It's cool. It was really cool, but we talked to some guys that hit it a lot, and one guy that has a cabin over there, and he was like, man, it's going down. He's like, it's to be expected, right? It's not going to last forever.
They say the Henrys are going down and the Pontagon's coming back.
Yeah, the Pontagon's exploding. This year, you know, it's been a down year everywhere. If you get on social media, that's all people talk about is
this bull lost 20 inches.
Water, water, water.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the, you know, you mentioned Monroe and the elk.
Yeah.
That when I was growing up, I didn't, if you saw the basket buck 4-point, you hunted that thing. You know, there's not a lot of big deer down there, but elk are, you know, I grew up loving elk, and now I've completely changed. Elk are on the back burner.
Really?
I love mule
what,
deer.
What made it change? What do you like about mule deer that elk don't have?
Just how different their, you know, their antler configuration is in, you know, their...
Elks, there's no... Yeah, elk, if you get a cheater on an elk, that's pretty rare.
Right, you know that...
But for the most part, they're just straight six.
And the big flying cheaters and stuff that deer get, and I don't know, it seems like...
Every deer's different.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I've been an elk guy. Like, I just kind of figured, mule deer, whatever. I hadn't really seen any big mule deer, mm-hmm. and that might be part of it. But I'm like, man, you get in the rut with the elk, they're bugling your face. Like, you can't even, like, imagine that. You have to experience it. But then I start hunting deer with these guys, and, like, I'm getting the itch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is something about them that just...
Well, see, and your obsession with elk kind of... I was straight mule deer, because I love how, like... It's not this way, but it's a pretty, it's how I viewed elk hunting. It was like, an elk during the rut might as well just be a moo cow, you know, out right. in the middle of the forest, because they're not that hard to get close to. And my mom had an elk tag, and it was difficult. The weather didn't cooperate some days. And I mean, it was more difficult than what people made it seem to be,
mm-hmm.
Which I was glad, because it made me kind of jump on the bandwagon for elk a little bit more. But I'm still a mule deer guy, just because... The term gray ghost is real, and it's like McCade's playing a video right here on the table, and we watched a buck, watched him for a good 2 hours, not 2 hours, like 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden he bedded, and all you could see was probably the front 4 inches of his snout
uh-huh.
and his black nose, and it's like if we hadn't been watching him, we would have just glassed right past him. And
whereas an elk, you probably would have seen it. Like, they have a little different coloring, they stand right. out a little bit more because they're big, but... Yeah. Not saying an elk can't hide, because they can.
Yeah.
So, tell me more about this antler restoration. Like, what's your process? I mean, it's probably a little trade secret,
right.
but walk us through, like, some of the basics. Like, people just contact you, say, hey,
yeah, I mean,
I found this horn, or I shot this deer. What?
You know, I mean, you know, I do a lot
cases.
Of... All cases, you know, I fix a lot of broken light bulbs, you know, they... break all our horns
yeah,
during
right.
and anyway, you know, a lot of it, you know, is sheds, and you know, they recolor them and put them on a I offer replica skulls that I make my, you know, I made the molds myself, and You know, they've got 10 times the detail that your commercial, you know, you
can
buy.
What are the skulls made out of?
A polyurethane resin.
Okay. So you have a mold.
Yep. I made the mold, you know.
That's so cool.
It's got all the nasal, the detail in the nasal cavity and all the really fine lines on the skull. And
Did you just take one of your skulls that you had from a buck, create the basic mold, and now you got it for?
Yep. Cool. I have three sizes of those. I have an elk skull that I'm working on the mold for right now. I've got a coos deer skull that I offer. You know, just it's wild. It's not a one size fits all for the skulls.
You know, littler bucks.
140-inch buck does not look good on a skull that had 200-inch set of horns on. You know,
yeah.
Pedicles are all weird.
Right, and just the actual the length and the size of the it's a big difference.
Yeah. So do you use like smaller sheds to fix bigger, you know, broken?
It depends on how. If it's something I used to a lot, but I got to where I was, you know, if I needed a big back fork, I'd cut up my own horns, you know, and I kind of lost my keeper pile. I cut them all up to fix other people's stuff, and
that's your investment right there.
That's
right?
But now, if it's something major, I'll find a horn that I like, and I'll make a mold of the section I want to fix, and then I'll cast it, and then I've got that mold for future.
Holy crap! So now you're saving horns.
Yep.
Wow, dude.
So that's how you're fixing. I've always been curious. I know nothing about fixing a horn, but I've heard, you know, like I was on a muzzleloader hunt, and my buddy's brother shot this buck, and when he died, he was kicking and thrashing all over and broke an antler. And he's like, "Oh, the tech service can fix it." But so you're actually taking pieces of antler from another, like a shed, and you're attaching it to the broken piece, and then. Are you using you putting a epoxy?
So
there's some sanding stuff going on.
That part's not too, you know, that's not too secret. You know, you find a tine you like, you know, that'll look good, and you cut it off where the, you know, kind of where the, I base how, you know, how long I repair it based on the mass, you know, they kind of get something that carries the same mass out.
Right.
Carry it and compare it to the other side.
Yep. And you know, you cut it off and you drill a hole with a dowel, you know, you put it together like that in epoxy, and then there's several epoxy putties on the market that you use, and you can knead it like clay, and then it dries and it's hard, and you can sand it and put detail into it and paint it, and it accepts stain and the whole nine yards.
Wow.
And that, you know, that's how that goes.
Is that kind of a tricky part of the whole process, though? Finding that something that like matches up that's going to work with the one you're trying to fix, or are there
the hardest ones to rebuild are the really massy bucks, you know,
because you're not finding those sheds all day,
right? You're not, and it's, you know, it seems like when they get older and they get all the mass, they're not, you know, they're really different. Like I wish I could show pictures, you know, kind of what I'm talking about, but
yeah,
that's why, like, it's nice, you know, I've got a pretty good collection of deer horns now that if I need that big hook cheat or something, I just make a mold really fast, and then I've got that mold for future, and I can just pour it.
Right. Yeah. So now you're not doing the cutting a horn, epoxying it onto another one, because you have the mold.
Right. With elk horns, you know, I cut up elk horns because I don't, you know, I buy antlers now, and you know, I'll go through my pile and find something that I like, and, you know, find a tribute, I guess. You know, something that the horn I'll cut up and go from there. But with deer, I use replicated tines to repair them, or if it's just a tip, I'll, you know, you can just build them out of the epoxy putty.
Yeah, I wondered if that's how you did it. Like, if you're not missing much, if you just built it up and sanded it down.
Whatever. So what's your market? Like, do you do a lot of work for taxidermists?
I do. Because
I have a close friend who's a taxidermist, and he hates fixing broken tines.
That's the case with most of the taxidermists I've met. You know, it's a pretty tedious, time consuming thing, especially when it comes to matching color. So a lot, you know, that I do quite a lot of work for taxidermists, and my favorite work to do is, you know, when people reach out directly to me with the biggest set of sheds they've ever found, type of a deal, you know.
And you bring them back to life for them?
I get to see their reaction and talk to them, and, you know, I like hand delivering stuff because I like to see how it, you know, you can tell by somebody's eyes if they like it or hate it. It's not
right.
I can't
sugarcoat it.
Eyes don't lie, right? You know, whereas if you send something in the mail, if you all know the person that's a horrible texter, you know, how are you doing? Good. Do you like it? Yep. You know, it's hard to tell through a text message.
Don't elaborate, really.
Right?
And share the emotion through that.
But,
dude, I don't know. What about this?
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at, so we're sitting here in our booth at the expo, and I have this buck I found on Antelope Island shed hunting a couple years ago. And it's got a bunch of, like, what I call, like, stickers, little, what I don't know what you call them. What's the technical term for all the little?
On the bases?
Basal points.
Basal points. Mm-hmm. And that carries it quite a ways up.
Uh-huh.
So, say he's broken there. I mean, are you adding some of that texture to a horn you're fixing?
Yeah. Man. You know, eye guards especially. Eye guards are tough.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you fix those or do you build those up?
I used to build them, and it's way more work than it's worth, like hand tooling, you know, tooling the clay with it, you know, with your tools.
Right.
If you can cast them, it's the exact same as the other side. You blend it good. No one ever knows. But, you know.
Holy crap. What's the biggest horn you've ever fixed, elk and deer?
A single side.
I like single side questions better than double sided.
I don't get a lot of singles. I you know, mostly sets, but I have a 430 set of elk horns in my garage right now.
Dang.
Can you make me a replica, please? what would that go for?
Oh, geez. I've never made a replica of an elk before.
That's a lot of.
It's a lot of. It's a ton
material.
Of material, and the materials. Mm-hmm. The material cost is the biggest. You know what people base their. You know, that's the biggest chunk of the price, I think. You know, it's very time-consuming, but the material is super expensive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude.
And
430-inch set of shits.
It's the 430.
Can I ask you what state?
They are from Arizona, I believe.
Wow.
Damn Arizona.
So you're getting stuff from all over.
Yeah, I've got whitetail bucks from Minnesota and Canada, and I do a lot of stuff from New Mexico. And
how are you marketing
Instagram.
Your business? Solely Instagram.
Solely Instagram and word of mouth.
Wow.
There's
the power of social media.
Yeah, exactly.
You look like you're busy.
Oh.
You staying busy?
I'm booked out 5.5 months right now.
Oh, my crap.
And
you're not even going to have time to shed hunt.
Right. Oh, I make time.
Oh, okay.
I make
priorities.
Time. But I, you know.
That's why it's 5.5 months, not 3.
Last year I got to the point, you know, I was, you know, I've got 2 kids, I've got a wife. And I had a full-time job last year. I got to the point, like, it was too much. And
so you had to make that hard decision.
I made that decision. I'm like, do I quit doing this, you know, but I love it, or do I, you know, keep working my job?
That you don't really love. It's a
right,
job.
Right. You know, I'm a welder fabricator by trade. Anyway, fast forward to today.
Well, you'll always find a job with that.
Right. Fast forward to today, I work 15, 20, 25 hours a week. At the welding shop, I TIG weld roll cages for UTVs and Jeeps and stuff. And then I go home and I work the rest of the week on my antler work.
That's awesome, man.
And, you know, my boss is, you know, my welding boss, he's, if I got to go meet a customer or something during the day, he lets me come and go as I please. So I'm pretty blessed that and doing what I'm doing.
See, yeah. If you worked in Salt Lake, that wouldn't happen.
Right.
Working in Hurricane in southern Utah, they understand.
Right.
They respect that.
Right.
Right? That's how I love it.
Right. And, you know, I also do a lot of trapping. You know, that's
the other thing why I wanted you on this podcast. Trapping is something that interests me a lot. I know nothing about it. I know you put a trap out, hope an animal comes by and steps in it. But I know there's more to it than that.
Yep. You know, it's pretty well known that, you know, coyotes especially, they're super smart. They're, you know, you hear about people that call them, you know, smart coyotes.
They wise up,
you know, just like any animal, they wise up. It seems like predators have the upper hand on that because, you know, they're hunting the smart deer, yada, yada, yada. And the biggest pleasure for me is, you know, trap, especially coyotes, is you're tricking the smartest animal in the hills you're convincing them to step on a 3-inch by 3-inch
round plate, yeah,
round plate in his backyard. He knows what everything looks like. You're trying to put something there that's unfamiliar to him, but not too unfamiliar that he
got
shies
a nose
away
on him.
Right, they've got a nose. They can smell. If you fart, they can smell the dirt. You know, you can't trick a coyote's nose.
That's got to be one of the best lines I've heard in a long time. If you fart, they can smell the dirt.
Right.
I don't know. We had some good lines on the last one.
That's true. You know, that's yeah, good. Yeah.
I'm pretty anal about, you know, certain things. You know, when people like, you know, everybody wants to come check traps.
Right.
You know, the other coolest part is seeing those animals you don't see every day up close, especially, you know, your bobcats.
Yeah.
You don't see bobcats in the light. You know, very, very, very.
Houndsmen have a hard time. Right. Catching bobcats.
Right. Them little bobcats run circles and oh, pop dude, rock to rock.
They make those dogs look dumb.
Yeah. But the wild thing is, bobcats, if you can find them, they're easy to catch.
Really?
You know,
because they're so curious.
They're so curious. It's just like, you know, your house cat. You can shine a laser pointer, and they go crazy. If all you got to do is find something like that catches their attention in a place they're going to go, and you'll catch it. It's just a waiting game for them to come back.
So, I mean, it's specific probably animal to animal, but what are you looking for when you're setting your traps out?
Sign. If you can find, there's things called, I call them cat toilets. You know, just like your domestic house cat uses a litter box, bobcats and lions are the same way. They
have a more specific location there, not just wherever the urge hits.
Right, right. They'll come around and they kind of, it's like, I'm going a blank right now. It's like a calling, you know, it's like a calling card. It's a couple different
marking
cats.
Marking their territory.
Right. Different cats will use that, and they can, you know, that they can tell when another one came around.
Gotcha.
You'll find, under a tree, you'll find 20...
piles of scat.
20 piles of bobcat turds, and, you know, that's a gold mine. You've never seen anybody get more excited than a trapper finding a bobcat toilet like that. I mean...
I
never knew that.
Right.
Yeah, I never knew that either.
Right.
I kind of figured you were looking for, yeah, some sign, but you were looking for, like, tracks and a location, maybe a pinch point where they're going through travel. Is that stuff you're looking for, too?
Yep. Cats seem to be really selective about where they go. Like, you've heard the phrase, you know, trying to hurt a cat. You know, you can't, if they don't want to do something, like, you know, you can't.
They're not going to do it.
They're not going to do it. You know, being on location is probably the most important part when it comes to trapping cats. And coyotes the same, but coyotes roam a lot more than, you know, a bobcat does.
So what do you, because I love animal skins, but I know I would have a hard time killing an animal in a trap. For me, probably never had that to get over that little bit.
No, I actually have. You know, it's pretty personal when you're right there, you know, looking
they
at
know
them.
It's coming.
They know it's coming.
It's just like treeing a bear or a mountain lion.
Right. You know, it's just one of those things. I think there's a buffer, like, you know, when you're sitting behind a rifle 300 yards from a coyote, you know, you don't look in his eyes.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I'm not heartless by any means. I've got two dogs. You know, I've got little kids.
Yeah.
I think that I have a better connection with, you know, bobcats and coyotes than a lot of people because I get to interact with them on such a close level like that.
Yeah.
It is hard. You know, you try not to get numb to it, you know, because you are taking a life. But
right. Try to stay respectful and.
Right, right. You know, I don't, you know, I shoot my coyotes with the .22. And they're, you know, obviously, you know, you shoot anything that close, you can shoot them in the heart 5 feet away and they're dead in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So bobcats, I use a catch pole and, you know, they're dead in, you know, 20 seconds.
Yeah. Right.
It's lights out fast. You know, you cut the blood off to their brain and it's lights out fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fast. You know, I make YouTube videos and things, but the misconception is people think I'm, you know, mocking the animal, but really, you know, I take a video, I take pictures so that I can remember it, you know, so I'm not.
It's just like people in taxidermy. I can't believe you you know, put that animal on your wall and say, no, I don't do it so I can,
right,
and, you know, to mock the animal or anything. I'm doing it so I can remember,
right,
the memories and, like, how, you know, this animal is forever glorified.
Right.
Basically.
Right. Yeah.
Like, look how pretty this animal is, and it now gets to live on,
right,
rather than just...
And, you know, bobcats and coyotes, they don't have a set of horns. You know, you can save like a deer, and so, you know, I mounted a bobcat last year, the first one that I ever caught, and I'm going to do a coyote if I ever catch one pretty
now,
enough.
Bobcat mount would be sick. I would have an easier time killing bobcats than coyotes, just because coyotes are like my dog, my lab.
Right.
But a freaking bobcat?
My dream is like the bobcat reaching out for a chucker. Like, that'd be a cool mount.
They're, what was I going to say?
Talking about they don't have horns.
He mentioned, you know, we'd have a hard time killing a coyote. You might say that until you look into their eyes. Like, if you get up close with a coyote and look into their eyes, they're like, there's nothing there.
Really?
You know, like, you look into a person's eyes, you can see they're living, like, I feel like coyotes are a little bit evil.
That's interesting.
Like, they will do whatever they need to do to survive.
Wow.
You know, they, you know, the males go, every male goes around, you know, they kill pups and things and... No, they just do what they got to do. They are survivors.
That's crazy. But I think there's probably a crowd out there that are uneducated, and they might think that when you trap them, mm-hmm. that hurts them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from what I understand of traps, it puts enough pressure that they can't get out, but it doesn't hurt them
right.
physically, right?
But
there's probably an extent that they get hurt. I've seen some, they try to get out, and then they end up injuring themselves
right.
in the process.
You know, if the coyotes, they tend to, they're way more stubborn, and that, you know, they'll run and hit the end of the chain a lot, and the traps are, you know, they're not sharp. There's not teeth on them like yeah. the old bear traps that you saw in the Looney Tunes.
Yeah, right.
You know,
it's just a flat
piece of metal. I file mine down so they're round, so that it doesn't cut their fur. You know,
wow.
so there's less damage.
Yeah,
but it's just designed to hold. The trap is designed to hold the animal there until, you know, I get there to dispatch it.
So when you're running traps, how many traps are you setting out, and how often do you check those?
Utah law requires at least every 48 hours you have to check, so every two
wow.
days, you know. And that, other states have different regulations. Nevada is every 96 hours, which is 4 days.
Gives you a little bit more.
Arizona time. Is the exact opposite. They're every 24 hours, and you cannot use foothold traps on BLM property. You can only use foot traps on private property.
Wow. So do you have to, what other traps are you using? Like
big live box traps.
Gotcha. Okay.
You can't catch a coyote in a box trap, so they're SOL on trapping coyotes there unless you're on private property.
Does a foot trap include like a snare?
I don't know about snares in Arizona.
It's kind of primitive, right?
Right. Snare check laws are different than your foothold traps because they're designed to kill.
Oh,
I got you. You have to check your snares every 96 hours, I believe. I don't run snares. I have never figured out how, so I just...
Yeah.
And it's a little bit warm down there, so if you catch something, you know, I don't want it to be wasted and get rotten.
Right.
It doesn't freeze every night where I trap, so in other places it does. But, you know, Utah, I run between about 4 dozen traps, and that is every spot that I set... I'll set at least 2 traps, sometimes 3, you know, give them, and I'll make, you know, 3 different sets so that if the coyote comes around and doesn't like this smell, he might like this more, kind of up your chances.
How far, like in general, how far out are you spacing in one set?
In one set, like I'll do a set and then 10 yards away, I'll do another one. It just kind of depends on the location. If it's a big wide open space, I'll, you know, could be 100 yards in between each spot, you know, but it more or less depends on where you're at, kind of.
How are you keeping track of your locations?
I use Onyx Maps. That's not a plug for them, but I use them. You know, you can.
No, they're very handy, man.
Very handy. You can drop pins and show if it's a coyote trap or a cat set. But for the most part, you know, I do that in the beginning. You know, when you set a new line out, it's tough to remember. But, you know, after you check them a couple times, you just remember.
Right. That's awesome. But, so what? There's definite laws regarding traps. You kind of touched on that a little bit. What does it take to be able to start trapping? So, from a law standpoint.
From a law standpoint, all you need to do is get a trap registration number in Utah.
So what does that entail? Like, what do you have to do?
You have to go to your DWR office and pay them $15, and they issue a trap number.
Okay.
And that trap number you have to put on each of your traps with a like a copper tag and attach it. And with that number, you don't have to put your information on it, but with that number, say, example, if you catch somebody's dog or, you know, something, the fishing game can identify whose trap it is with that number.
Right.
From there, with that number, you can trap coyotes and foxes, everything in Utah except for pine marten and bobcats. You have to have a fur bearer's license to trap bobcats and pine marten. But coyotes, foxes, you don't have to have a
trap. It's a matter of $15 for a
matter
registration.
$15.
Cool. And then what are your traps running? Like for price?
They're about $15 a piece.
And how many would you say would be a good number to get started?
I started with 6. You know, obviously the more traps you have out, the better. You know, the more traps are out,
the more success you're going to have.
The more animals have a chance of walking by your by your sets.
You're increasing your outs.
But definitely. You know, if you have the land, you know, the availability, you know, if you don't have to drive 50 miles to get away from the people, it's different than, like, you know, I know there's people that trap up here in the city, and, you know, they've got a little piece of private that they can trap raccoons in, mm-hmm. and, you know, owning 2 dozen traps wouldn't benefit them. You know, if there's only 5 raccoons in this piece, you can catch them all in a couple of days with 6 traps.
Yeah. Is that pretty key, like getting a location that's far away from most, like, public access, like frequented locations?
For me, it is. I get stressed out if I know that, like, on a holiday weekend, especially Christmas, Thanksgiving, when everybody's out shooting their new guns, farting around with their families, mm-hmm. You know, I don't want people to find where I'm at, just because I've had so many issues with animals being stole from me out of traps.
Really?
Your tree huggers, they come along and they find a trap and they'll smash it with rocks, or death threats. I mean,
Is illegal, right?
It is illegal. It is illegal to... By the book, it's illegal to take your dog out of a trap that's not yours. I'm not going to touch on that, but if my dog gets caught in a trap, I'm not going to take the trap, but I'm going to take the dog out, you know.
It's your dog.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh.
But, you know, I've had enough of a problem with people that I like to get out away from everybody.
That's interesting. So are you hiking in a ways?
Oh, yeah.
So you're loading up a backpack with your traps.
Yep.
How do you secure your traps?
I just toss them in the old horn hunter pack that I got.
What about when you set them, though?
Oh, there's...
some stakes?
They're called earth angers. They're like a... Okay. I'm trying to describe... It's a stake, basically, but it's a stake you pin in the ground on a piece of cable, and then you pull it and set it.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a tree anchor.
Okay.
So, you know, so you can't pull it out.
Gotcha.
Or... That's how I set for coyotes most of the time, because you're out in the flat. You know, if I get up into the cat country where I'm, you know, there's trees and stuff, I'll use cable tie offs, like a 10-foot piece of aircraft cable, that, you know, that I can tie to a tree.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm learning so much. This is great. I've always been intrigued by it. I've always wanted to start it, but I didn't know all the laws, and honestly, I should take the time to learn it, but I hadn't. But it's always seemed like, there's way too much I got to do to be able to do that. Yeah. I'm not going to do it. But
it's really overwhelming, and it's so hard not to get discouraged. I still get discouraged. You know, you have a dry spell where it's hot and nothing's moving. And
is cold weather the key part of it?
It seems like storms get the animals moving.
Really?
You know, animals are always out moving before and after big storms.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's hot, you know, when it's hot, especially, like, I like to trap early, you know, in October, and because you can trap coyotes around water, you know, because it's mm-hmm. still hot enough the coyotes are having to go get drinks every day, and it's really predictable where they're going to be. When there's snow on the ground, there's not a limit to where they can go.
Yeah.
But.
What's the trapping season?
There is not a trapping season there's a season, like, on foxes and bobcats, but on coyotes, you can trap year-round.
And you don't have to have a fur bearer's license in Utah to trap a fox?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. There's just a season when you're allowed to kill them.
Right.
It's September to March or something. It's really long.
Wow.
You know, you can, you know, with the bounty program in Utah, you're encouraged to, you know, take as many coyotes as you can. And bobcats, the season is November 15th to March 1st.
Wow. So do you hunt coyotes also, like go out and make stands or drive around and shoot them?
I do. I've always got a gun in my truck and, you know, a road dog's just a bonus.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to do a lot of calling. That's how I kind of got really obsessed with coyotes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like anything. It seems like in Utah it's really bad. Shed hunting and coyote hunting are, you know, it's the cool things to do.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I'm not knocking anything. I enjoy both of those just as much as everybody else.
Yeah.
Obviously, I enjoy shed hunting because I make most of my living on that.
Yeah.
You know, other people finding sheds. But, you know, I get out a handful of times every year and go calling with buddies. And.
But would you say you're getting more of your coyotes from trapping?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How many on average a year do you trap?
Last year was my best year trapping coyotes, and I caught 11. You know, if you have coyotes are pretty known, they're the hardest critter to catch in Utah.
Tough.
I mean, they've got the nose, and they're just smart. Like, one thing about coyotes that people have a hard time, you know, they've got their nose, obviously, but, you know, if you bury your trap, but if they step around and they don't step on the pen, if they step on the trap and it wobbles, they'll dig it up without setting it off. They'll dig it up, flip it over.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
I can imagine. Holy cow.
You're like, what happened here? And you see all the coyote tracks. You're like, no way.
It's like hiking into freaking check a trail camera. And you're like, man, there's going to be so many animals. And it's like, moo cows.
Right, right.
It's kind of the same experience. A huge just frustration letdown.
Yep.
And when you pack all that in there, I mean, it's even worse. It stings.
I pack all my traps in pretty far to catch the – I do a lot – I work a lot harder to catch bobcats and coyotes just, you know, because depending on the market year, they're worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
The coyotes are, you do pretty well on coyote pelt and the bounty, but coyotes like to travel on the roads. And if you can find a two track outgoing, you know, they run the two track roads, they run the cattle trails, they're, you know, long running features like fences. They're.
What's more bobcat country?
I live in the heart of it. You know, the Rim Rock is kind of your stereotypical. There's bobcats everywhere. Bobcats mm-hmm. live in St. George city limits. They live in golf courses. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But, you know, typically they like somewhere where they can get high and watch. You know, they like the Rim Rock country because they can walk along the tops of the rims and look down. And as they're walking, look for the cottontail rabbits. And, you know, there's not – I like to think they – You know, when I think of a bobcat, I think of the Rimrock country, you know.
Yeah.
Like.
How many bobcats on average are you trapping a year?
Utah, each person can trap six. You're allowed six bobcat tags
okay.
a year. This year was ultra slow.
Yeah.
The rabbits all got sick and died. And so that affected the cats.
Yeah.
Between me and my dad this year, we only caught six. You know,
wow.
My dad traps as well. Last year, I filled my tags shortly after Christmas. You know, there's still 3 weeks left in the season, and I still haven't filled my bobcat tags.
Dang.
But, you know, it...
That's something you wouldn't even, like, really think about unless you're out trapping bobcats about the rabbit population.
Yeah, you know, I'm not the best, you know, I'm not the best trapper out there. You know, I love talking to everybody that messages me. You know, I learn something from everybody. I like to hear how people do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I buy all the trapping videos I can. That's where you learn the real stuff is you buy their $40 DVDs from your trapping supplies. And, you know, you support them. They can put the videos out. You learn a little bit and can pass it on.
Awesome. But, Man, I'm, like, so intrigued. I'm, like, all ready to go, like, buy some traps and go set them, like... It seems very interesting.
Yeah.
So would you say, based off your Instagram name, do you like trapping more than you like antlers and the restoration? Like, why isn't it Utah Shed Antler Fixer?
I thought about changing my tag on there for a while.
You're established now.
Right. Everybody knows, you know, Trapper McKay. That's
yeah.
what, you know. So I maybe just not to confuse people. And yeah. If they, you know, they're scrolling through the feed and they see my business is Trapper Man Wildlife Studio, you know, they see that.
Awesome.
Who the heck is that? I didn't follow that guy. Click unfollow, you know. You know, like I said, Instagram's how I advertise, how I get the word out. It's free advertising, man. You can't beat it.
Exactly.
And so I don't want to change something if it ain't broke.
Dude, you nailed it on the head right there. Well, perfect. People listening to this podcast, if you have any antlers you want fixed, anything, really. Sounds like you do it all. Replicas, yep. Fixing. I mean, is there anything you can't fix? Is there a point where an antler is beyond repair?
There's a point where I'm not happy. I can make it look decent, but I'm not happy with the end result, so I won't do it. You know,
you got to be proud of your work, right? You don't want to be.
I'm proud of it, but I don't like most of the stuff that I do. You know, I'm a pretty big perfectionist when it comes to that, and I like it when I'm doing it. But then I step back and come back and look. I'm like, really? It's good enough. It seems like it's.
You've got a high standard for yourself.
Right, right. And I have a hard time meeting that for myself. You know, I'm happy with it, but I'm not as happy as I could be, I guess.
Gotcha.
You know, I haven't figured out how to get there yet. I'm still working at it every day, every set of horns. Seems like, you know, I try something a little bit different and it works, or it doesn't work, and I got to start over.
Gotcha. So what does that horn look like? Is that like your chalky pink?
Oh, yeah, you know.
Antler, is that something where you're like?
I've done, you know, if you look at my page, I've done my fair share of that stuff. I don't enjoy doing those because there comes a point when the natural detail of the antler is gone.
Yeah, weathered away.
And if you want to pay me a lot of money, I'll put that back in. But it's just so time consuming. You know, if they're your horns, all the ends of the tines are deteriorated and it's flaky and. You know, when you set it down, it leaves dust on the table. Unless it's 113, 115-inch horn, don't bring it to me, please.
Have people contacted you to do that? Yeah? All the time, huh?
Those kind of horns make the best. You know, you can make almost anything look pretty good with a photo. You know, they make awesome comparison pictures like, oh, this is what I can do from chalk, you know, to a decent, you know. When they get that point, you can't. It's hard to fool people. It looks good. You can tell it's colored like, oh, yeah, that looks nice. But, you know, I'm trying to trick people. You know,
gotcha.
I don't think I've got there yet, but I'm trying.
That's awesome. Well, I talked to McKay here about possibly fixing this deadhead. I don't know what I want to do with it. It's all the horns are white, which he's still got some velvet on it. Leads us to believe he died probably shortly after stripping his velvet off, but his nose is all ate off and gone. So I kind of got to figure that. I think I want to leave the white, and like you were talking, like just judging by how the skull looks, would you just go replica? Like,
oh yeah, there's
skull at that point. Like to build something like that, wouldn't that be insane? Like to build a nose back, is that even possible?
I could put it. It's hard. Real skulls are so brittle, it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to add anything to them and have it be like really secure. You know, like I've done it. I can do it. You can put, you know, your horns on a skull if you've got one. Mm-hmm. It's just hard. They're so brittle, and yeah, I see. I'm not gonna like, you know, I am actually, you know, my replica skulls are pretty tough. You know, it's a hard plastic. You can smack the nose of the hammer and they're not gonna break. If you smack the nose of a real skull, it will break.
Oh, definitely.
It'll shatter.
Yeah.
You know, if it falls off the wall, it's got a pretty good chance of not breaking.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
But, you know, I would probably go with a replica skull on that, you know, just because, you know, we could put a new nose on that, but there would be a seam. It would, you know, it's just hard to blend all that stuff back in, right? Yeah. You know.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I think I want to do that because he's a sweet buck, biggest buck I've ever found, or bigger than anything I've killed. So,
heck yeah,
he's cool. I want to see it on the wall. So we'll have to definitely talk about that some more. But I appreciate you coming by, talking, dropping some words of wisdom.
Right.
Hopefully, we can help spread your brand, your business,
absolutely,
get you some exposure. We have Our audience base is pretty widespread across the nation. So we're a part of the Sportsman's Nation podcast network. Dan, the guy that founded it, he's located back east somewhere. And there's guys recording podcasts all over, from whitetail guys all across like the East Coast, Midwest. There's guys in Alaska doing podcasts, and we're all part of this network. And so there's some cross promotion pollination there with people. And so, yeah, I'd love to help spread your brand. I think you got a great thing going on. I love your pictures, dude. That's eye catching at first. You got great composition, lighting.
Thanks.
And then just seeing your quality of work. I haven't seen it in person, but dude, your photos.
It's just here. It's spread out all over at the expo.
You got to take me and show me. I want to see some of it. So, look him up on Instagram, Utah Trapper McKay.
Yep.
Is there an underscore there?
They're Utah Trapper underscore McKay.
Okay. And that's how he does his business.
Yep.
You can message him on there, right? Get
yep.
some pricing, information about getting your antlers fixed or replicas made, whatever you want.
Yep. Yep,
so,
yep.
Perfect.
Thanks
dude.
For having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming by. It was really good meeting you and talking to you and getting to know you a little bit.
Absolutely.
Okay.